Hello and welcome to another episode of We Got This Podcast. I'm your host, Lech Kuzowski, and I'm on a mission to problem solve team dynamics issues that impact business performance so that businesses can realize their potential by realizing the potential of their employees. As a company grows, bringing in somebody to manage the HR processes is really a no-brainer. However, if you want to treat HR not just as a bare minimum, but a crucial function to how your business operates, it can really be a key element of the organization's growth. But the million-dollar question is, when is the right time to bring somebody up? And to help me answer this question, I've invited Vanessa Kotler, who, as the VP of People and Culture at PolicyMe, has quite literally been there and done that. So Vanessa is a people-first leader dedicated to building flexible, transparent workplaces. She has spearheaded various initiatives and, by having worked in 15 countries, has a very unique understanding of how different markets operate and how people have found success in all of them. And she made the shortlist for the Business Leader of the Year, Women in IT Award Berlin 2019, for her work with her startup. We Got This showcases individuals and organizations that create people-focused workplace cultures to help it become the norm rather than the exception. It's something that will require a mindset shift, and probably not something that any of us can do alone. But together, we got this. Vanessa, welcome.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me, Lech.
Grateful for you taking the time to be here with us. Without further ado, as always, is the custom here. I would love to know who you wanted to be when you were little.
Yeah, great starting question. I will say, you know, you sent me this one in advance, and I was thinking about the best response. And I kind of have two answers for you. One is the very little child, Vanessa, and one is the as Vanessa got a little bit older, but was still young and figure out life. So when I was little, I wanted to be an actress, and I will tell you why. I think from an early age, I always loved public speaking. I think I was like 6 years old, and I put together a production of Chicago for my family and made them watch it, and I had learned all the songs, and I was a horrible singer. And I just said, okay, sit down, and I just like did this whole thing for them, and they were like, okay, she definitely is passionate about this, but like, we don't think there's any future here because I could just not hit a single note. But, you know, from that, I would say really came that interest in getting in front of people, speaking at events, and a lot of what I do today in terms of, you know, things like this. But as I got a little bit older and I was thinking, you know, what do I want to be? When I grow up, when I was in high school, I had kind of three different paths. I thought about going to journalism at Carleton, U of T psychology back in the day, all these Canadian schools, in case you don't know the like, sorry, I should have given context there. And the last option was Queen's Commerce. And that I ended up choosing the last one, Queen's Commerce. And I studied business in my undergrad. But I think the three, it's very interesting to think about it because back then I didn't know what it meant to be in people culture, to be in HR. And they're very interrelated. The journalism aspect, the talking to people, the writing, the psychology component, organizational behavior is huge in what I do every day and being able to coach employees and support managers in their growth. And obviously the business side of things, right? Because that really is what ties together how you can be a good people culture or HR leader. So it's interesting. I would say from my like wanting to be an actress days to like narrowing that focus and then to getting to where I am today. I see some paths. I don't know if you do some connections, but I would say that is the kind of the way that shaped them.
It's because of these paths, it's because of these connections. That's why I love this question, because I can guarantee you that this question is going to live with you for the next few days, few weeks. And you will start seeing even more connections of what you do. And that's kind of the purpose, a side purpose behind this question, let's put it that way. But the other reason I love it is because it opens up that portal to when we were younger and we had all these dreams where they weren't yet impacted, but what's not possible. We were too little to realize that. And I think that's kind of the purest form of a dream, of a purpose that we can have. And if some of us are lucky to continue with that through, sometimes by chance, sometimes by devotion, and not kind of letting that passion die out somewhere. along the way and the society kind of beating out of us. But it also often brings me onto the part of the education system, which you've mentioned. You continued with what you studied and what you're doing now. But often what we get caught up in is that at that stage, especially let's just narrow it down to university times, we haven't got a clue. I don't mean in disrespect to you, but I'm sorry, but when you're 17, 18, 19, you're choosing university job for life, I'm sorry, you still haven't discovered so many things. So how can you make that decision? And now it's going to be even more difficult when people who are born now or have been born the last 10, 15 years, they're going to live much, much longer. They're not going to retire at 65 or 67. So that decision is, I don't want to say it's even more difficult, more pointless, but it, in a sense, you will probably reskill along the way somewhere. So don't attach that much weight to it, I guess, what I'm trying to say is at this moment in time. Although your parents, the previous generations will project their lens onto this situation, you have to do this because based on their experience, not what you're going to experience in your life is going to be completely different. But listen, we've gone completely off track. But nonetheless, I love this question. I love to have you here. And the reason I wanted to have you here is because when we were talking about different potential topics that we can explore, the one that we decided on is when to bring the face HR person or culture hire into a growing organization, scaling organization. It doesn't have to be a startup. Any organization that is small-ish and decides to grow is a very important one, simply because often when I talk to clients, when I work with clients, I've got this sense that I'm undoing certain things or creating things that should have really been done when they were smaller. They, for various reasons, they haven't been done because they didn't have the capacity, the time, the skill set of a person like yourself to be able to do that. And that's why I'm really interested in this topic. But maybe before we really dive into that, I'd love a little bit of background up policy me and kind of when you came into the fold. If you could paint us a picture that you feel would set the right context for this discussion in terms of, you know, how far you want to go back in terms of policy me, what you do, what the organization does, and where you kind of came in, at what stage they were in.
Yeah, for sure. Many questions in one there. So I will set the stage, give you a little context, and feel free to ask me any follow-up. So in terms of what we do, we are a digital insurance company. We're based in Toronto, Canada. We operate in Canada today. We are a remote first company. So essentially we are distributed across the country in terms of our people. In terms of the timing and what that all looked like, so back in the summer of 2021, so just under 2 years ago, one of the founders had actually reached out to me on LinkedIn. We had a common connection, someone that was already at Policy Me. We had studied together, and I saw that it seemed he was enjoying his time there, and they were looking for their first, at the time, it was the head of people role. And what was really interesting was a few things. So when she first reached out to talk, and, you know, there's one female co-founder of Policy, it was Laura. And, you know, we got along so well and started talking about their vision for growth, what they wanted to do. But there were a couple of things that I noticed that at first. So their job description had said Toronto-based company. And one of the first things I said to her is, look, I'm remote first. At the time, I was in Winnipeg. It was the middle of the pandemic. And I didn't have any plans to relocate to Toronto. So that was a really interesting moment. And I'm sure it'll come up later in our conversation. But Policy Me is a company that before the pandemic was so young that everyone was just in an office space together, co-working, just at the same table kind of feeling, because they were not even 20 people. And the company grew a lot over the course of the pandemic and really shifting how they were exploring just the operation, right? Do we need to be in person? Do we not? And it was a big consideration because they said, you know what, we've been doing remote for in the last while and it's worked. So we don't really see an issue with you being outside of Ontario. So that is the context for kind of how that started, because I actually was the first hire outside of Toronto. And that led to essentially a snowball effect of many different decisions that then meant, okay, now we are a remote first company, because if you hire your head of people or your VP of people and culture remotely, you know that what that likely means is that the company is going to have more remote employees, right? Especially because they're doing a lot of the recruitment and hiring and leading that side of the business. So it was really interesting because choosing me as their person led to a bit of a different path, perhaps, from the way the organization was set up from that perspective, right? Because in terms of being so remote first, if you have someone that is in person all the time, you may kind of like limit that ability to have a team, because some people feel that disadvantage, right? If I'm not in office, other people are, kind of what that looks like. Anyways, we'll go more into that. We do have an in-person office in Toronto that we make available to our employees as well, and a lot of opportunity for people to work however they want to work. But that is the level setting piece. So let's get into the timing, how many people were there, why they brought me on when they did, and what that looked like. So it's funny, I love where I work so much. I always just speak in we terms, but back then it wasn't we, wasn't it? And they were at a point where, you know, there was just about 35 employees. And what Lauren had said to me is, you know, we're at a point where everything is really great here. And we want it to continue being great as we grow. And we think that if we bring someone on now at a senior level, we can make sure that we're setting the strategy and building all the right things that will enable this. And we think if we bring someone on that's junior, they may not necessarily become a part of a team that's setting the strategy for the organization. And I thought that was super interesting, because founders that see and believe in the value of essentially bringing in a strategic people hire at that time before there's any issues, just to create a place where people want to be, is a very different perspective than founders that bring someone in. You know, when you have 100 people and all of a sudden you have so many issues in the company and you realize that, you know, you hired 4 recruiters, but now nothing's quite working and there's like a little bit of a mess and this team doesn't really work anymore. You need to totally restructure. And don't get me wrong, it can work if you bring someone in then, but it's just a very different experience for the employees that are part of the organization and coming in. If you're essentially coming into a place that has been really thoughtful about how to scale from a people side of things versus just like that, the randomness, and now it's like, let's bring the people person in to try to fix whatever happened, right? So I think that there's kind of those two approaches. Do you bring someone in to help you grow in a particular way, or do you bring someone in to fix whatever has happened? It is two very different journeys. And I will say, so we are now going to be 56 in a couple of weeks and continuing to grow. And there's obviously been, you know, a little bit of turnover, a little bit of restructuring, and being there to help through all those phases and to build all of that. I think it's a really unique place to work. You know, I think any organization says, you know, our culture is great, our culture is unique, all of these things, but our engagement survey, it's incredible to go through it every quarter and just see how people are feeling. And we really are a place where for the most part, you know, we're not perfect. I can't say with 100% certainty that everyone loves to come to work every day, because that would be kind of a statement that would be false probably for anyone to say. But, you know, from the most part, from what I see and what I hear, we've really built a place where people love just showing up. And I think that's the value of making those decisions when they were. So I'll pause there. I know that was a lot. So let me know where you want me to go deeper or the follow-ups there.
Of course. Fantastic. It was a lot, but I also asked 10 questions in one, which I'm often guilty of. I'm always wondering whether that's something I should work on. Probably I should, but it's also something that, to a certain extent, has become a mark of this podcast. There's a couple of things I want to touch upon. The one, the one you mentioned towards the end, not necessarily linked to the aspect of, you know, when to bring somebody on, but the element of the misunderstanding of what culture is. First of all, we have so many definitions. It unfortunately has become a buzzword, to the point that I'm debating going through a kind of culture hiatus in terms of using that work in any type of word in any type of communication of my own. But I digress on that. But the most important aspect that I really liked is said, you said that you can't say that everybody loves and enjoys coming into work every single day 100% of the time. I think you're absolutely right. We can't say that, because I think that's a kind of fool's errand, fool's goal to have as an organization. And for me, if anyone managed to achieve that, fantastic. But I genuinely believe that it kind of goes a little bit against human nature. And we shouldn't be striving for that. I often get said to me that, you know, oh, you talk about culture, it's all about, you know, unicorns, rainbows and butterflies and that. No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's a lot of the time, it's the nasty stuff, it's the dark stuff, but it's also part of the culture. That's what part of any relationship is. That's just how it's meant to work between humans, in organizations outside of them. That's just how we build.
Yeah, if you're happy to share a little bit more there, I think so. I've shared this with others before. A perspective that I take, both in terms of happiness at work, but just happiness in relationships, just in general, I think there's kind of two main ways to look at it. So days of the week are just a general percentage. With a general percentage, I always say aim for 80%. You know, you should be happy at work about 80% of the time. You should be happy in your relationships about 80% of the time. Why 80%? I mean, that's my go-to arbitrary number. But what I've found is that with that 80%, I think it, you know, we're human, right? Like you were saying, and we, I think, are more motivated when everything isn't perfect because we like to see improvement. We like to see growth. We like to have things we can discuss that we're working on or this isn't quite right. And I want this to be a little different. And when everything is just perfect, we don't truly enjoy it in the same way as when there's a few things that aren't quite there that we're working on for them to become better. And that could be anything from there's a part of your job that, you know, really is really difficult and you're not sure you would want it in your day to day, but it's pushing you to try something different. And you realize that it's actually kind of nice to have a little bit of that balance. Or I say 80% because maybe 20% of the time, you know, and this happens to a lot of us, especially in a startup environment, you're doing some administrative thing that you're like, wow, this is repetitive, you know, and they come up every once in a while and you're going through it and, it, you know, it's just part of what you do. But then you realize that those things help the employees because now they have access to whatever thing I was updating. And you know, a really good example is after performance reviews, title change, you know, or any reporting relationship changes, I still go in the system, everyone, you know, making sure everything is matching up. And it's just one of those things. And am I passionate about editing the fields and an HRIS system? No, but, you know, it's part of what helps me deliver for the people on my team. And, you know, there's no job where you can just cherry pick everything so that 100% of the time you're doing all of the things that you love. So I think the 80%, the other one that I was going to share is, you know, I've used this with people that I've talked to, especially closer friends, that say, you know, I don't know if I'm happy at work. What I say to them is, you know, you go to work 5 days a week and you should feel that you are happy at least 3 of them. And when I say happy, you know, happiness is relative. Let's call it feeling good about your day at the end of the day. Like, wow, I got some things done. Wow, I'm excited about what my day looks like. If you're not hitting 3 out of 5, that means you're like at less than 60%. Means you probably can work somewhere else and be a bit happier. I think that 80% is a bar you can meet. So it's a really good mechanism to, if you're just trying to figure out, am I in the right place? Am I doing the right thing? Start tracking your days. You get like a heart or an X on a calendar. I have an X. I'm a physical paper gal still. So, you know, if you look at this, you can see everything that's going on in my life. But, you know, if I'm ever in a point in my life where I'm going through those things and trying to figure out what's going on, I've done it in the past. Fortunately for me, I do generally mostly have hearts policy me in my days. I don't track anymore, but you know, if I'm ever in that situation, it's a really easy way for you to visualize what did the last month look like.
That's very, a few nice tips there. That's for sure. I like the thing that you said about, you know, how people want to feel. I think in general, we don't know as individuals how we want to feel in life in general, what we want out of it. And I think I don't want to get into kind of therapy, psychology and emotions, really deep stuff here, because there's a lot there and we could go on for hours. Well, at least I could. But one of the parts that I do when I work with clients on this, and we create, you want to call it culture playbooks, team charters, organizational charts, and things like that, there is an element I always incorporate. For me, by far the most important ones. Forget business strategy, forget leadership, all that. Fantastically important. But for me, there's one that trumps all of them, and that is, how do you want to feel when working together? How do you want to feel when you're at work? Just to kind of get people to reflect on that and have that shared agreement of that space and of this element, just that they stop, because we're busy, we don't know how to do this, multiple reasons. And I really want to encourage people to reflect on that, because it's an important piece. All of what you mentioned is fascinating. I've had Wim Keh on the show probably about a month ago. We talked about the myth of work-life balance, and he arrived, Wim did, because we both disagree with that concept. work and life balance, it suggests that work and life, personal life, are opposing forces. We're not. They're not in reality. So you suggested energy balancing as a as an alternative, and I absolutely love it. I'm mindful we could go into this topic. I'll brutally yank us back into the reason we're here, and that is that element of when a person like yourself that comes into a function like yours at an organization, through the lens possibly of, you know, what the situation was at PolicyMe, you've already mentioned that, but also potentially going wider based on your experience and your observations. What are some of the signals, metrics, for lack of a better word, that an organization that is either a startup or is relatively small, but has been operating for a while, wants to decide to, you know, to be more intentional about the environments that they create? Is it employees? Is it turnover? Satisfaction service? What are those? What's your suggestion here?
Yeah. Let me just clarify to make sure I answer what you're looking for there. Do you mean just to know when to bring on that person? So what are some indicators that would help you see this is the right time?
Precisely. Yes.
So this is something that I do for hiring for any role. And I think one of the things that we've really focused on at PolicyMe and that I'm very passionate about is hiring really when you need human. And I know that seems simple, but given everything that has happened in the tech space, especially over the last year, very easy to see that many companies just hire to grow, right? And that was kind of the metric that was looked at. Are we growing? And headcount was a way to showcase growth. But a better way, in my opinion, of looking at when is the right time to hire is you need to make sure that you absolutely need the person that you're bringing on, which brings us back to your question. How do you know? So one of the things that I always do, and this is, to be honest, how I ended up bringing a second person onto my people and culture team a little bit over 2 months ago, is I start what I call my backlog of projects. And I started keeping a list about 8 months prior to even starting to recruit for this person, which was, you know, things I would want to do if I had time. And that is what I call it. And it sits on my computer. And when something comes up that I want to do, that I don't have time for, but that I think is meaningful, it goes on the list. And what happens over time is you start building out this list and you start seeing what's on there. And eventually, you know, for me, with our founders, we got to the point of, okay, there's quite a bit of stuff on here. And a lot of these things are now pretty meaningful. And now that we're a little bigger, we really do want to start tackling these. And those are things that I want to do, but I don't have time. So someone else needs to come on to help us do this. And what is really valuable about going through that type of journey to this, one, you're confident when you're bringing someone on that you need them, because all of these things have now become higher value and you want to tackle them. And two, there's a very clear plan that you can put for that person for their first 30, 60, 90, even 6 months. Of what are the main things that we're bringing you on to do that we're going to need you to tackle? And as an add-on to that, through your interview process, you can ask questions that are directly related to the work they're going to be doing to make sure that they're, one, you know, interested in it and that this is type of work that is going to get them excited every day. And two, that they have kind of the actual right skill set that you're looking for to take on the project. So that is, in my opinion, one of the best ways to know, is it time to bring someone on? And what I will say, just to contextualize it within the context of your first people and culture hire, the projects that may end up on your list of things I want to do, but I don't have time, could be things like building a culture of continuous feedback, where we're finding that people are not sharing feedback with each other enough. It's become that feedback comes at performance review cycles, or like even for some smaller companies, we don't have any way of assessing performance at this organization. You know, that would be high on your list if you're not tracking how people are doing it all. And kind of related to that, you know, we're struggling to find the right people to bring onto the team. Recruitment is taking up a ton of time of the founders or the owners of this company, and they just don't know what to do anymore. We're finding that there are managers that just don't know how to lead. And we need to do some type of training or support these people in their growth journey, and we just don't know how to do that. Or as to what you had kind of alluded to earlier, and I can't remember if we were talking about this in prep, but it was, you know, that idea that there's some employees at the beginning that as your company grows, they may not be growing in the right way for the roles you want them to go into. And how do you know, can we actually upskill or reskill these people? Do we need new people? What does that look like? These are all difficult questions. And one of the things that I saw and that I've seen in the past as well, founders are super busy and owners are super busy and they don't necessarily have the time or frankly, sometimes the skill set or the knowledge of having done a lot of these things before, right? And if you're a founder and you're trying to figure out how am I going to make continuous feedback a thing in my company, that is a really big question. And that is just one of very many that a person like me has more experience in and can help you answer and can help you figure out those approaches. So just to summarize that, I would say my like things I want to do that I don't have time for list, coupled with some of these initiatives that are very strategic in nature and can guide the direction of your business, a really great way to figure out when the right time.
If I may, I'd like to pull at that thread a little bit more. Yeah, I love that, the analogy of the list. Apart from the things that you mentioned, what else could, from a non-organizational point of view, if we look as a business, what could end up on that list, apart from the things that you've mentioned already?
Yeah, so things that could end up on the list. You could be having, and I'm just going to list you some things off the top of
my head. Go for it.
And, you know,
we can turn it into a brainstorming session.
So, you know, I would say you could be having some issues with different team members. There could be interpersonal conflict or things that are starting to take up more time and you need someone to support you in addressing whatever that looks like. You may find, as we were saying, that, you know, your employees are not developing or upskilling as you need them to. And you need to figure out, can we upskill them? Can we not upskill them? Do we need new people? You maybe try to figure out, what policies do I need to have in place? What does my employee handbook look like? I don't have any onboarding in my company and people are just kind of scrambling. Looking at the differences between, do you have company onboarding? Do you have team-specific onboarding? Is there consistency across these? When someone's leaving the company, what does their experience look like? Things like, you know, you're hearing that people are not enjoying their day-to-day anymore and you can't figure out why. Or you're finding that subcultures are forming across teams and one is unhealthy and you're not certain as to what happened there. There are so many people things that could be starting to come up. And then the other thing that's super interesting on more of the positive side of things, you could just be getting asks from your employees, right? I want someone to talk to about my career with. I want someone that can help me figure out how to make the most of my time here. I am really struggling with essentially how to figure out my leadership style. Sometimes you get these questions and I think the really interesting thing about founders and owners is they really are jack of all trades in many ways and they can do a little bit of everything. But sometimes they're excellent at what they do because they're incredible at finding information that they need. That said, when it comes to greater level in a particular area, sometimes that's where it gets tricky, right? When someone has a more nuanced question or someone is looking for, okay, how do I actually give feedback? How do I receive feedback? How do I praise my team? Is praise something that I should do often? Is it something that I should leave for select moments? In terms of feedback, how do I stop people from getting defensive when I give them feedback? All of these things that start getting more nuanced, I would say, are things that can go on your list or signals that, hey, it might be time to bring someone in that can support us in answering feedback. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Makes perfect sense. And of course, this list is going to be very much independent, reflective of you as an organization, of where you are, what your needs are. So I just simply wanted, I asked that question to simply give people inspiration of what we're talking about, because it can be overwhelming. And one thing that's on my mind, I actually had it in my introduction initially when I was going to introduce you, but I've removed that, but I think it's a nice place to bring this in. I've got a slight concern because a lot of organizations at kind of early level, the first step when it comes to HR is to actually outsource it. And I get that, right? It makes perfect sense because if you're small, you want somebody to specialize, done, right? Fewer headache to manage at that stage. But there will be a time where that will be detrimental to you because it's outsourced, you don't see certain certain elements, certain things that you need addressing around feedback, around, you know, how organization, how the teams cooperate and so on and so on. Mm-hmm. You might miss that. So I'm a little bit concerned that things might be going a little bit further than they should by being outsourced, and that they're kind of hidden under a blanket. And because founders, owners, the board have so many things to worry about at that stage, it's just yet another thing that they don't have time to do, and also they don't see. And that's kind of part of my problem, because I've been researching when a person like me could come in and help an organization. And I've identified a few touch points. Main one or two main ones are obviously product market fit, if we're using the startup metaphor. And that is to do, because obviously they need to confirm whether they're going to exist, whether they've got a product to sell. That's the most important thing. Fully get that. I'm fully behind that. And the second one is financial. Is do we have enough runway for us to actually be able to focus on something else that is not money generating? Again, fully 100% behind you on that. But still, even organizations are at that stage. They ticked the two boxes that I've just mentioned. They still have a bunch of things that they prioritize over culture. And I'm not in any way judging, but I'm curious what that is. I've never been a founder. I've never been an owner. I can't get fully into the shoes of people like that. The question is, what is there that, you know, could, what can convince them that this is actually the place to look? Is it just the personal belief that this is what we want to do? Or is there something else from a more kind of business-oriented point of view that this is going to actually benefit my business performance in the long run? That's why we should do it.
I think with what you were saying, with the business context of, you know, different things that are important for founders to consider in terms of, do we have the right product? Are we bringing these things to market in a way that makes sense? And let me know if I'm going in a different direction than you intended to, but I think when you think about the people and culture side of things and just the value that it can bring, it really depends on how you're looking at people within your organization. I always say, you know, people are your greatest assets, and they are the ones that are going to make your business successful or not successful. Ultimately, that's kind of the simplest version of it, right? If you have humans that are not motivated, that are not driven to make the mission and the vision of the company what you want it to be, it's not gonna get there. So I think that it's just really important to look at it from that lens, right? If people are your biggest assets and you want to make sure that they are enjoying their day-to-day as much as possible, working on meaningful work, that they're going to be able to deliver on the business value for you that you need, it can be really helpful to have the structures and the support in place for them too, right? And you were talking a little bit about the outsourcing versus hiring within. And I know you mentioned that was a little bit of a digression, but I think it's an interesting point, because I think earlier on from the HR side of things, there's just things that founders have questions on. And I think it's excellent to ask those questions without hiring someone, right? If you're just setting up your policies, if you're setting up your first employment agreement, all of these things that essentially are, you know, the things that you need to get going. You don't need to hire someone to help you do those things. Those are more the processes and the policies and the things that you can get some templates. You can, you know, do more of just how other companies do it. I think it's when you're looking for, how are we going to make this something that's differentiated? How are we going to build something here that feels unique? You know, someone said to me that a lot of what I talk about sometimes sounds like product. You know, it sounds like you're building a product. And it's because you need to look at the broader lens of, you know, in this case, be it customers, it's now employees, right? And what are their needs? What is it that they're looking for? How do you build for them? What are the things that they have in common? What are the ways in which they're different? And essentially, by being able to target experiences, that's how you build something that is longer lasting and more impactful for the people that are a part of it, right? So I think it's that difference between when you just need some of the basics versus what are you now needing something that's going to make you be more differentiated and that's going to make a more unique culture in place.
I think you're right with that in terms of outsourcing at the start. At the beginning, it's a job to be done.
Exactly.
You just need it, right? You need somebody else.
Yes.
It's you're just being clever. You're just being smart. You're devoting your time and energy when it's actually where it's most needed. It's when it's keeping in mind that at one point that's not going to be enough. If your aim is to create an environment as you describe and similar to the one I believe, if that's not you, if you're not that owner, that CEO that is, you know, interested in that, and you just want a place where people come in, do their job, and clock in, clock out, and job done, and they deliver, that's your choice as well. Kind of intentionality really, really matters here. And that brings me on to an interesting discussion that I've had, and I'd love to get your kind of what your take is on this, because I don't think there's one answer to this. I had an exchange of comments on LinkedIn a few days ago around organizational culture. The person said, I share the viewpoint, you know, it's culture very often, or working environment, starts within the mind of the owner of the CEO. Absolutely. Okay. But then it's really built, it can be built grassroots by the employees. It's created by employees. Fantastic. I agree with both viewpoints, but there's one difference. No matter how much the grassroots element wants to kind of create the culture, the organization environment, they can do whatever they want and have all these fantastic initiatives. If the owner, the CEO, doesn't agree with that vision or they don't want that, I don't want to say it's going to be impossible, but it's going to be very, very difficult to whatever the grassroots element is to bring that to a full-fledged or fully beating organism and life of its own in the new organization. Because consciously or subconsciously, the owner, the CEO, is likely to sabotage one way or another. And for me, it's an interesting dilemma of, you know, not necessarily what you do about that, but how to kind of perceive the situation. Have you experienced anything like that? Have you seen that? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's an interesting point to me. And again, just my perspective, what you're talking about sounds like cultural alignment. So I would say it sounds like when hiring occurred, there was a miscommunication perhaps as to what the founders or the owners were looking for versus who they brought on. Because really that what you're talking about, in my opinion, shouldn't necessarily be the case, right? You shouldn't have a group of employees with an uprising of wanting to change the culture of the organization, because it means that
overthrowing the government,
right? Yeah, like from what you're talking about, it sounds like perhaps there was a lack of clarity as to what the culture of that organization was, mm-hmm. or was trying to be. I think that it is the role of the founders and leadership team of an organization to think about what culture do we want to have here, and how do we communicate that effectively. How to recognize it effectively when we see it in our people? How do we hire for it effectively? And we do that intentionally at PolicyMeet. We have clear values that we live by, that we all know what they are, and we talk about it in how we recognize behaviors that we want, how we hire people that are going to add to those values and bring in different perspectives that enable us to live those values better. And I would say, you know, if someone is totally misaligned with who we are, they're not going to add to our culture, right? So, and they're probably not going to hit that 80% mark or those 3+ out of 5 happy days at PolicyMeet. So you probably are better suited somewhere else, and that's totally okay, right? I think that if your culture fits everyone, then that's a problem too, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of those things where if you're building something for everyone, you're building something for no one.
You know, absolutely.
I think it's important to create something that for some people is going to be amazing, knowing that for some people, it's not going to make sense.
The scenario I was thinking about as well is what you mentioned, there's definitely misalignment that happens very often between teams within organizations. But the scenario that I also have in my mind is when an organization doesn't necessarily have a culture. So they couldn't have recruited, as you said, to align. And it just starts to happen organically as cultures do. And it happens to go in a certain direction that we could class as healthy. And that's what kind of the teams want to do, because the owners, the C-level, never really bothered with culture. And what I was trying to get at is that, you know, if they do that and the owners are not aligned with that, they don't want that, that's going to cause friction. And it's that it works one way and not the other. That an owner can say, I've got this vision for this culture, I want to implement this, we're going to do this and that and the other, I want your buy-in, you know, they do the design sessions and everything, facilitate that, and it's great, and then get the grassroots level. And it's like, because my work usually starts with the ownership the high level of the organization, because no matter what I might want to do with a person like in a position like yours, because that's often people I work with, we will not achieve anything if you don't have the backing of your CEO. We can design everything that we want, but as you said, if there will be that misalignment between that, and that's where it starts. That's why the kind of the ownership level, C-level, senior leadership need to be on board to be able to do that, and then the grassroots level starts. But the grassroots level, if the C-level is not on board, doesn't unfortunately work, which is a shame.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. You mentioned very briefly, it's what we talked before we connected, cultural chasm, that disconnect between the original group of people that were in the organization and as the organization grew, that were brought on board, and that disillusionment, for example, used to be small. I could speak to the CEO because he or she was sitting two desks away from me. Now I can't do that because there's three layers of structures between me and them. I guess I'm going to risk, and I'm going to ask this question because I know it's very broad, but I'll leave it entirely up to you where you'd like to take it. Are there any steps that organizations can take? You, as when you came onto Polysemy, when a person like you comes on board, that can not prevent, I think, don't think it's possible, but kind of mitigate or be aware of that to mitigate the creation of that cultural chasm as the organization grow. Have you got any suggestions or tips that organizations can explore?
Yeah, so I think it's really interesting. I think there's a couple things there. First, I think it's important to understand and feel comfortable with the idea that the first people you bring on may not be the people that are there a year, two, three later. And it's for a few reasons. First, there's some people that just like to be at the beginning of something. They like to build, they like to do all of the things. And as an organization grows, roles get a bit more specialized, right? People are working on specific things because there's now more hands, and you need people that are going to be able to go deeper in a certain topic. Some people love to be generalists and love to be at the start of the journey. And if you go from a group of five, a group of 10 to a group of 50, there may just not be interest for those people to stay. And that's totally okay. And I think it's about using those skills that people come with at the beginning to help you learn about what you need for the future, and helping those people understand, okay, what does the path look like here? Is this something that I'm interested in or not? And accepting on both ends, hey, I may be the person at the beginning, but I may not be the person here. The flip side of that is people that come in and want to grow in an organization. And maybe they come in one role, but then they can take something else on as the company grows or shift. And those are really interesting paths as well. You know, being able to see your future within a company, you get really excited about the product, you get really excited about the team, and it's something that you want to continue being invested in. I think it's just accepting that it can go either way, that either way is okay. And then if you have someone that's been there from the beginning, that maybe, you know, was a very junior employee, as sometimes happens, and 3 years later, the company's bigger, but because they were so junior when they started, they couldn't, you know, grow within a role to become a senior leader in the organization because it just wouldn't make sense. It's, I think, bringing those individuals in through the journey, right? Help them hire the people that are going to be their leaders. Help them be a part of the process. Help them feel included. So they're excited by their new mentor or this new person that's going to come in and now give them so much more support and ability to grow, right? One of the things that we see is maybe you have someone that is coming straight out of school and joining a startup, and they want to be a CMO one day, or they want to be a CFO, but the founder is also a generalist, right? So there's this gap as the company grows that the founder is no longer the best mentor for this person. So knowing that someone's going to come in, and yes, maybe now you're not reporting to the CEO, but you're reporting to an awesome VP of finance that is going to help your career grow so much because they have the role you want. They can help you figure out how to learn the skills you need to learn, how to get in the right mindset, and how to essentially have those future opportunities too, perhaps even in another organization, right? I think it's just thinking about it from that positive lens of how can you make this be a good experience for the people that you have that want to stay, that would otherwise not be something that's available.
I think you're right. We often get caught up in this trap that we join organizations for life. That's not the case for us, or that employees will be with us for life. I think, no, again, unrealistic expectation on either side. It's ultimately this analogy that was introduced to me many years ago, I absolutely love, that we're all on a train journey. And sometimes we are on the same train, sometimes we're on different trains. And it's all about that. Ultimately, every journey is our own. And it's whether how long we can travel together, fantastic. But sometimes there's a station that I'll get off at, I might come back on later on. You never know. But ultimately, we kind of need to think about in these trajectories as well with work. You know, the work that you do, you're enjoying now, you can bring value, you get value, you get satisfaction, you get fulfillment. If it happens to be for a very long time, fantastic. But sometimes you might have to switch up gears and go to a different organization to get that as well. I'm curious, in a way to wrap up as well our conversation, because as always, with most of my guests, we could be going on for days on end. I'm really curious what it is that you've got up ahead of you in store over the next few months that you're really excited about, that you're working on something that's going to see the light of day in terms of any projects that we might see or something internally that you're really working on, but you can't wait for it to come to life.
Yeah, I will tell you a couple internally and then a few other things that are going on. So we have been running manager and leadership training since January. It's the first cohort that we're running. I'm a partner through the US that has been helping me in terms of giving me some content to Elevate Academy. They're awesome. And we will be wrapping up the first cohort in June, which is super exciting. I can't wait to collect all of their feedback and see how they felt about the experience. We are a little more than halfway through now, and it's been amazing to see the growth in our managers and the leaders within Policy Me through the last few months and just how much the group has learned and gotten from each other. So super excited to be wrapping up cohort one over the next few months. And you and I were talking about this, but as you know, I just got back to Canada last week. And part of that was so that I could be here for some weddings, as happens every summer.
And, as you do.
Yep, as we do. And the other part was there's some really interesting in-person events happening here that I'm going to be speaking at over the coming weeks. So I don't know how many people will see this in time or how many people are in Winnipeg, but we have an in-person event to hire full stack developers in Winnipeg on April 25th. I am speaking at People and Culture for Startups panel on May 11th as part of Tech Thursdays, which is an initiative that happens here. So really great opportunity to come in person and meet other people and culture leaders. And then there's another event on May 17th for HR leaders that is going to be through McFadden Benefits that they're running, and I'll be the keynote there too in person. So I'm generally very excited for all these in-person events because it's been a while. Like, I've been doing a lot more of this, and don't worry, I love this. And I love that I can do this from wherever I am, but just really, really excited to be on a stage with real humans next to me and to be able to shake some hands and see what it's like to meet some of these connections in real life.
No, I'm with you on that. The you say shake hands. I often say I'd love to see that people have actually got legs, because we can only see the torso, and that is
sure.
It.
So, you know, yeah, it's the one people
knowing how tall you are. I've spoken to people and they think, you do realize that I look, for example, I look big. I've had somebody who said that I look tall, but I'm actually 5'4".
Yeah,
and we're talking about a man. Okay, go, wow, really? I'm 5'9", average height.
Yeah,
you know, again, until you see people, I'm entirely with you. I'll include all the links, the places where you're going to be speaking. For those who are tuning in now, they can obviously they can still reach out and then can register or whatever the case. And if they are locally there, if you're listening afterwards, hopefully you can visit the website. There might be some materials, talking notes, videos, or whatever that you can still take advantage of as well. Vanessa, it's been an absolute pleasure for having you here. Thank you very much for taking the time and helping us spread some light onto this matter, because making that decision is not easy, and I think it will be very individual to every organization. But I think we've provided enough materials, at least for thought, for people to be able to kind of make that decision for themselves when the time might be right for them. So thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. Hope you have a lovely rest of your day.
Before the rest of you lovely people head off, I share every couple of weeks through my newsletter, Culture Micro Practices, little things that you can try within your organizations to help you improve your team dynamics. So they are often small, quirky, little unconventional ideas to inspire that cultural change, because they are all about promoting psychological safety, how we collaborate, how we work together, the employee experience overall. And these little things, when done consistently, they have a massive impact on the organization environment that you create and help your teams work together in a more authentic way. If you are interested, do head over to human.pm/CMP, CMP for Culture Micro Practices. Apart from that, if you enjoyed the show, I'll really be grateful and appreciate if you supported it by giving it a little thumbs up with the like button or share buttons for other people in your network could see that as well and benefit from everything that Vanessa has shared with us today. I was your host, Lech Gusovsky. Until next time.